Let me just deal with a question about the Kedusha of the Nazirite in comparison to the Kedusha of a Kohen. The Kohen comes by his Kedusha by birth, and the Nazirite by his vow. He defines himself in a way which gives him laws of holiness. So the Kohen and the Nazirite are similar in that they are both restricted from coming in contact with death. But the Nazirite, unlike the Kohen, with the exception of the Kohen Agadol, the regular Kohen, has a mitzvah to involve himself in the case of the death of any of his immediate relatives, his blood relatives, his mother, father, brother, sister, son or daughter, and wife. So then he has an obligation to involve himself in the death, to be there, to become Tamei. That the Kohen Agadol is restricted even from that. But the ordinary Kohen, who's Kaddish by birth, his mitzvah with the Nazirite is really more like the Kohen Agadol, as he is restricted from coming in contact with any death, regardless of who or how closely related he is. So the Shem Shmuel, I believe he says it in the name of his father, of the Avnei Nezach, says that the reason is that where a person's Kedusha comes to him by virtue of some kind of heredity, so that it is the fact that he is holy as a matter of having certain genes. So then the Torah says, okay, you got this holiness because of your, as it were, your DNA. So anybody with whom you share that immediate DNA, you're obligated to tell yourself. But the Kohen Agadol, who reaches his office not because of his DNA, but because of his merit, so he's not allowed to. Because his Kedusha, his extra Kedusha, comes to him by virtue of something of his own doing. Therefore, he is restricted even from those people who are with whom he shares the genetic commonality, because genetics has nothing to do with his additional office. Same thing is true of the Nazirite. The Nazirite does not come by his Kedusha through genetics. It comes by his own definition. Therefore, he is restricted from coming in contact. I think, by the way, that in all fairness, the common understanding needs to be respected over here. The common understanding is that while the Nazirite is doing something good, but there is a negative component to it, and therefore, even though a person is doing something good, but if there is some sort of negative component to it, so that requires its own offering. But I suspect that there is another message over here. You don't find this expression, v'chiper olav mi'asha chota al ha'nefesh, and he has to bring a sin offering in order to atone for the fact that he has sinned against the soul. And then our Chazal say, well, what soul did he sin against? So Lazar HaKappa says, well, he sinned against himself because he denied himself wine. But you don't find that expression by the Nazir who goes through his period of Naziros without incident. It's only with the one who, in the middle of a Naziros, has this unfortunate accident where he happens to be in a place, he happens to be in a room where somebody expired. He happens to be in a situation where he accidentally came in contact with death through no observable fault of his own. He just happened to be there. He almost loved Mesbeth, Pesach, Pisaim. It was just suddenly happened to be in a place he didn't. He wasn't reckless. He wasn't looking for trouble here. He just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. So the implication over here is, had he really had the right attitude in this Nazirus, this wouldn't have happened to him. And this is clearly, it's an ordained thing. The Almighty somehow orchestrated, it's providence. It's not his fault, yet it is his fault. Because why did somebody have to get killed? Why did you have to be the instrument? Over here, why did the Almighty orchestrate that you just happened to be in this place when somebody died? So Rav Elazar HaKappa is saying, well, it's because he, literal translation, shitzir es atzmai, shitzir atzmai min hayayin, that he pained himself, he caused himself pain by denying himself wine. So I think that there's a very strong possibility over here that Rav Elazar HaKappa is really trying to tune us into something else. Let's take a modern instance. we use something other than wine. Let's say that you have two people, and they both enjoy watching TV, right? So let's say they both spend 4 hours a day watching TV. Whatever they watch, soap operas, sports, Oprah, whatever, I don't know where else is on TV. And then they decide to tear themselves away from TV. One does so, and they're both for good reason, but there's a little bit of a distinction. So one of them has a sense that he's not using his time constructively. It's affecting his value system. He wants to learn more, wants to spend more time with his kids. Right, so he takes a vow. I'm not going to watch any more TV. And instead, he does the things that he really wants to do. So he learns, and he spends time with his kids. And he discovers a whole new world, the world in which he really wasn't participating. He was kind of drugged on this garbage on TV. So while it was kind of entertaining him, but he realizes and he understands that this is denying him the richness of life. So he takes this vow in order to experience something bigger and better, and in fact it does open that world to him that he succeeds. You have another person who realizes that this TV represents the fact that he's running away from himself. This is just kind of like a drug, and so he wants to save himself, so he takes a vow not to watch TV. He doesn't necessarily run off and do something better with his time. Instead, he really kind of sits around in pain about the fact that he can't watch TV. So on the one hand, he recognizes that this TV is bad news for him, but he's constantly thinking about it. He goes through this withdrawal, but in a certain sense, he's resentful. He's resentful of the fact that he's dependent on the TV, doesn't really say to himself, there's got to be a better world, there's got to be something, but even to the extent that he does things, but essentially, whatever he does is not as good as TV. So, if the Almighty were to look at these two vows, even though they're both well-intended, the Almighty would bless the former, and the other one would say to him, you just don't get it. Go out and do something with your life. Make your life rich, rewarding, exciting. If you're sitting, well, maybe, I don't know. But in a certain sense, what the Almighty would be showing him over here by it indicating in some way that this vow was not being received favorably, the message would be, if your denial of TV is giving you pain, then you need to understand that you're really out someplace in left field. If your denial of TV is, on an ongoing basis, something which you're saying to yourself, well, life is just emptier, then you need a head transplant. Number one, the fact that this is where you're getting your fulfillment in life should be an indication to you of how sick it is. And number two, instead of dwelling on the fact that you don't have TV, why doesn't this recognition about the fact that you're in pain about TV and how ridiculous that is, why doesn't that motivate you to look for something that really is meaningful? And in other words, what it says to him is, here you got this guy with wine, right? So he says, look, I just saw Soto. She went off and got her kicks by having a relationship with somebody else. I think I need to take some time off to reflect on my kicks. What am I doing? So where are my kicks coming from? My kicks are coming from wine. All the musas for him, including Sifri Chassidus, are all very encouraging about the fact that people need solitude. So one guy says, my kicks are coming from wine. I shouldn't be getting my kicks from wine. I should be getting my kicks from davening, from doing mitzvahs, from doing things for other people, from being with my family. There are really much better places for me to get my gratification from. The Sota, clearly, whatever she did something. And she was doing it, for whatever reason, she went to look for something more, right? How sick it was, whatever. But the point is that it's a wake-up call for somebody. It's a wake-up call for somebody to say, where am I getting my fulfillment? The truth is, people don't, as a clown, not that there aren't exceptions to the rule, but as a rule, people who aren't empty don't look for out-of-the-box things to fill their need for gratification. One of the things that that kind of stuff tells you is that there's somebody who's got a big vacuum inside. Because if they're living a gratified life, they're living a fulfilled life, they don't need it, but it's they recognize that it's a violation. I mean, there are ways that people get stuck. So here's a person, he sees the sota, and he says to himself, I need to really kind of reflect on my world. What are my sources of fulfillment? What are my sources of celebration? What am I getting my excitement from? So the wine becomes representative, and he'll separate from the wine, and the idea will be that he should hallow his life. So his life becomes holy. And in the process of becoming holy, he does in fact discover something richer than where he was before. The Almighty won't disturb that. But then you got the person who misses the wine. And Rosemar Kappa says he's got to bring a korban because of the fact that he missed the wine. That's what he's got to bring a korban for, because that's a message that he was really living, or he is living, in a bad place. He's living in a place where he's sitting around bemoaning the fact that he can't drink wine. He did it voluntarily, but meanwhile he's in pain. So the Torah doesn't say that, okay, so now, so you're a reject. The Torah says, I'm trying to tell you, you're in the wrong place. This is not what Nazirus is for. I'm going to make you end up in a place where somebody's going to keel over and you're going to have to do this because I don't like what you're doing. This is not where it's at. Do it again, because that's what he has to do. He's not relieved of his Nazirus. He's got to bring these carbonas, start over again. Okay.